before we even completed the implementation document for that strategy. And it was that change of course that resulted in two activities. The first one is the fifth bullet point there that speaks to an intervention plan, which is what Mr. Mkwanazi presented here earlier on in terms of the 18 companies that are critical suppliers to the DoD. It was an ending intervention process that sought to understand which industries will collapse and must not collapse from a strategic and sovereign point of view. The other thing that happened is we then commissioned the paper on the return on investment, which is what I was saying earlier on, that this document or this presentation is based on a position paper, because we wanted to better communicate and position ourselves out of that. So NBIC has done a couple of things. It's drafted a strategy. It will issue a public version of that strategy within the next month or so. It has assisted the defense industry in collaboration with AMSCO to establish a defense industry fund, which we have successfully registered with the FSB, and we are looking at the possibility of being funded through private investment, hopefully by the end of next year, to the tune of about 1.5 billion rand. But we are probably going to start dispersing funds to SMMEs in the next 3 to 6 months. We already have committed to the fund 150 million rand, which is going to become the basis or the seed for that fund. So we're not sitting and saying that there's, you know, there are problems and we're not doing anything about them. The BEE charter that was mentioned was a direct result of a collaboration between the DoD, AMSCO, and AMD. Belatedly, this was the third attempt at writing a charter. Two previous attempts failed. And I think we will never be able to transform this sector if we do not enforce not just the codes generically. We need to dig into the industry and have peculiar and unique parameters. And I think we've found those, taking into consideration even the military veterans as a key designated group. The resource-based alternative funding model, we presented this as NDIC to the National Treasury last week for consideration. And simultaneously, we were having discussions with Zambia on the same tool, because there are opportunities that Zambia may look at availing copper as a resource to buy equipment from South Africa. And if they accept it, this is going to be our first pilot program that we're going to work on, and therefore start competing with those who typically would be pillaging the continent, taking the resources out of the continent and not beneficiating them here. Designation, NBIC has approved and supported the designation and localization, at least the motivation thereof, for small arms, munitions, and weapons. That submission has been done with the DTI, but you will see later on that as an industry, through a different process, we have, we are going to be motivating for additional designations. Engaging with the JCPS cluster and National Treasury, that is a process that is commenced in terms of Treasury and has yet to start in terms of the cluster. As well as then the participation of the industry in government diplomatic efforts, and I think we are grateful for those opportunities. We've formed an export council, as I mentioned earlier on, to drive exports, because they do form the backbone of our revenues. We are currently working towards establishing South African Women in Defense to promote women participation in the sector. We launched the vehicle with the minister at AAD last year and are looking to see how best to position it and grow it. We've participated in the Public-Private Growth Initiative, which is the presidentially led process of the priority sectors that were adopted by Cabinet beginning of this year. And as a result of that, we are one of four high-tech sectors, along with pharmaceuticals and ICT, for which a master plan is being compiled by the end of June next year. So we're working at repositioning ourselves. Even the Fourth Industrial Revolution Commission, we are going to be participating in all their work, and there is a small possibility that that commission may designate the defense sector as the lead sector, if not one of the lead sectors. We had the initial engagement with them yesterday through Commissioner Ramabulane. Hence my absence in some of the interactions in the last 24 hours. And then we are trying to establish a market intelligence function as well as an permanent exhibition. Those are short-term to future or short-term medium-term projects that we would like to see going forward. So going back to the policy interventions, you know, already we have clothing and textiles designated for localization, and we have two-way radios designated. But you still find the police issuing a tender for two-way radios that is not compliant with the designation, which means they will buy radios abroad. That money will leave the country. The local industry will not be able to meet this requirement. I must be very quick to admit that, yes, the industry are not saints. The industry will have its own shortcomings and weaknesses. And in the case of two-way radios, though we produce fourth-generation software-defined radios that are the backbone of the Indian Air Force's communication system at the moment, there's no one who's prepared to invest in a factory for two-way radios, which is a simple radio, simply because the state is not undertaking fleet procurement. It's not forcing Sandral, Prasa, Sunparks, and all those entities to buy jointly. And because of that, a company looks at, doesn't see this big opportunity that is there, and says, you know, I can't invest for possible piecemeal projects. And so they don't. And therefore, two-way radios, though they are designated, every time there's a tender out, there is a request for exemption, and we've never been able to use that designation successfully. But it needs to be complemented by a fleet procurement approach to force the visibility of the figures so that people can make informed investment decisions. The other areas of possible designation that we would like to see considered and the areas of command and control, communications, cyber intelligence, optical, radar, and electronic surveillance systems, personal protective equipment, which is part of clothing and textiles, unmanned vehicles, as well as vehicles for patrol in rural areas. We have this capability in the country. There is no reason why we should import any of these things if we are serious about what we are saying. So that fleet or bulk procurement approach is a key requirement. That is why we would also want to engage the JCPS cluster to say that every metro police officer is carrying a sidearm. If you go and you look at it, it will most likely be a Glock from Austria. How many metro police officers do we have? If all those sidearms were bought in South Africa, what would the impact be on the economy? And then the issue of the BMA, we need to sort out its establishment properly and ensure that it is in place so that it can then begin to roll out the border management work that would enable the industry to also contribute to that. Other policy interventions, intellectual property. I think if we were to ask and say in the last 10 years of all the research that has been undertaken in the defense environment, what of that has been successfully industrialized? I think we need to ask ourselves those questions and try to understand the impact of the investment in R&D and how well we are doing. But also, once the technology is mature and ready to be industrialized, I think entities have to understand their mandates and understand their role that they are playing. Globally, the exploitation of IP in many countries is through agile, entrepreneur-driven SMMEs that are willing to take the risk and don't have the burden of corporate, you know, veils and everything that try and want to make this work. And so, yes, there is an effort through certain programs within AMSCO, but I think we need to do more to establish an industry-friendly IP framework management agreement that will optimize the industrialization and the exploitation of that IP. And there are examples of other countries that are doing this very well that we could learn from. I think the Arms Control Act might be up for review. It was last reviewed and signed in 2009. I think the committee should look at encouraging the department potentially to go into a process of review so that we can fix some of the things based on experience up to now that may need to be looked at. And I think we would want to ask the chair of the committee to engage his counterparts in other committees, DTI, DECO, DSTI, because those are the committees that may be deliberating issues that impact on us that we are not necessarily privy to sometimes because we hardly ever even get invited to partake in some of those, as it was the case here. So, Chair, without taking much more of your time, I would like to thank the committee for the opportunity to present and for the time afforded to us to lay the lie of the land and put the plight of the industries in front of the committee. I thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Hamilton, for the presentation. It was comprehensive. And, I think the two presentations allow them to be taken one after the other, precisely because they complement each other, basically. So now, colleagues, the matters are on the table. I now invite comments and questions. And Mr. Marke, we'll start with you, and Mr. Marek, we'll take these two colleagues first, or they'll come back to take the other hands. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the presenter was brutally honest. He's actually putting the matter to the committee itself. In fact, both of them. And they seem to understand where the problem is. Oh, I haven't gotten used to say challenges. I'm of the old school. I still say problems. And they even know the solutions. And they know who can give the solution. So I don't think we need to ask them questions. The ball is in our court. They're actually saying, are you useless or are you effective as a committee? That's what they're saying. And are we? Is there somebody holding the brakes for development in this industry? And for what purpose? Because they even have good figures there. And with us, we know in this committee where the problem lies. The PFMA is a problem for a developing country, a developing economy. The PFMA doesn't work. We've always in this committee been saying, what stops government to waiver some of these things? We've got denial. We say you buy everything local and full stop. We've got government printing. You go there if you are government. We've got SAA. And all of these have got problems. but there's British Airways domestically. Why should that happen? It's even said that it needs political will. Why don't we do it? I mean that is, and they always come here with the same problem, and all we do is to ask them questions, even if they've already told us the solution to the problem. Why should we allow that? If we can't do anything as a committee, why don't we toy? At least everybody can see we are doing something. As this committee can't, I mean, if they present this to Treasury, even if they are civilians, they don't understand some of these things, they will at least have a clue of what the economy is all about. I mean, a cell phone is from the defense industry. It was there maybe 50 years before it was commercialized. We know all of these things. I'm not sure if I'm not also lamenting and howling for nothing. But it definitely means we are useless as a committee if we don't sort out some of these problems. And what will we tell our people if we can't sort out some of these things? Why should, I'm repeating this for the fifth time since this committee was established. Why should parliamentarians go on British Airways? Why shouldn't they be forced to go on SAA? And we sit here and say SAA is going down. You see, some of these things can be sorted out by religious terms where they say a word and everything will. If somebody says a word and we sort out some of these things. Do I need to say anything more, Chairperson? I don't think so. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mackay. Honourable Murray.
Thank you, Chair. It's quite a somber, I think, picture that we have received, and I want to echo everything that my colleague has just said. So it's actually been a very, very bad situation where we are in. And as he's quite rightfully said, it's now the ball is in our court. And I think we, you know, the last presentation actually said something's very small, but I think the intention was quite big. Where there's a will, there's a way. And where there's not a will, nothing will happen. And that's probably why we sit in the position where we are sitting in terms of the defense industry. And I've got huge empathy with that. If I can just dig into some of the issues that has been said, because I've quite asked myself right at the beginning when you showed the difference, how the industry has gone down, what is the impact on government revenue via SARS? That 2 to 3 billion rand, is that the kind of probable loss of tax due to that reduction and capability and revenue and profitability? If not, you know, have you done an exercise to see what the government could have gotten in as revenue? Because somehow we must try to have a parallel between what we have lost in revenue as a result of this and where the industry stands at this stage. Because the unfortunate reality is we do not have a GDP growth of 3 to 4 or 5%. We have got other priorities, unfortunately. So within the realities, because, I mean, we can talk around the subject over and over and over again, and we can cry on each other's shoulder, it will not help us. Somewhere along the line, we must say, These are the parameters that we can work within. And don't expect government to withdraw money from education or health or housing or social grants. Do not expect that. So somehow we must look at an alternative that can work. And I will now get to also to Armscor's presentation, because you know there's no real solution that has been given, because somehow we must, and my colleague has said that I'm sure you guys know exactly what the solution should be, but maybe you are a bit reluctant to put that into our court and say, if this is the solution, go and get it done. Further, I just wanted to know, you have mentioned in that one spin-offs and spillovers with regards to Boeing and Airbus. If my information is correct, and you can correct me if it's not, we have basically lost the commitment to provide Airbus with the components because of the inability to produce that. Is that the case? Because that's a huge loss. That's a strategic loss going forward. Then in terms of the current summit, investment summit, is the industry involved in the summit? Is the local stakeholders plus international stakeholders, and what is expected from there? Just to get that perspective, you've indicated that there was an interaction with National Treasury with regards to the resource-based alternative funding model, but you haven't said to us what was the feedback, what was the response, because you know the next question is, so what now? So what happened there, and how can we play a role to interact with National Treasury in trying to push there? Because we're looking for alternative funding, ways of funding and funding models that we can support and justify going forward. Somehow, and you guys are best positioned to help us in that regard. So I could just go back to the Arms Corps presentation, Chairperson. Many mention has been made of Danel's delays and Danel's inability, and we haven't ever had the privilege of interacting with Danel, especially seeing that Danel is such a major role player for our defense force, but also the defense industry. And we've never, as a committee, we've never had that interaction, and it impacts enormously on the outcomes of what we must concentrate on. What is the role of Danel's delays in all of these? Because remember, we know that the practical example is the Badger, who faced it, that we know has been delayed for another 46 months. So, you know, somewhere along the line, we must also make tough decisions. Is it really worthwhile proceeding with a project like that, or should we say, is a Badger or the alternative for the Rattle, which is an infantry fighting vehicle, is that really the priority, or is it like somewhere it's been mentioned about patrol vehicles, both domestically and on our land border? Is that an alternative? Probably a much cheaper alternative. With regards to the interaction between the Danel and the defense industry, is this not the time for rationalization? We have seen the stats of where we were in 1990, and clearly in 1990 it justified the separate roles of the Danel, of Arms Corps, of the defense industry, private sector role players. It certainly justified it, and I think the numbers prove that. We are way down from there, where you must actually challenge the viability and the sustainability of each of that separately on their own. And are we not in a situation, even if we are forced into that, of to say, how see you guys rationalization can take place? Because we need to maintain the strategic companies under Danel. Those are the strategic companies. You've mentioned in your presentation about certain number of strategic companies and who will go under and who, and especially in terms of that matrix. You haven't told us how many of those are state-owned enterprises and how many are private sector. Because we have got a responsibility with regards to state-owned enterprises, and if we cannot even support them, and that has got an impact on private sector companies, then it means that we are not serving anybody. And somewhere along the line, we will have to cut deep and make tough choices so that at least our defense capability in the industry can go forward. That rationalization is, for me, critically important, and also reprioritization. We talk of these things. We as a committee, the minister, has talked about these things, but we don't see that really as a reality on the table as an alternative to consider that. Just another question. If you look at the Arms Corps contracting the industries, you talk about the failed bids by industry, and I'm asking myself, what are the real reasons? Is the reasons only because of Danel that is filtered down to those industries that cannot now supply, as a vetting process not been done prior to awarding them contracts, that they can supply, that they are funded, that they are liquid, that their balance sheet is strong enough to be able to supply those parts or projects or products? How does that happen, and how can one prevent that from happening in the future? I'm specifically interested in those force multipliers where you've said in your conclusion that where it's all threats to us, the loss of technical competitive edge and force multipliers. Now, we've always said in the past that we have to use force multipliers, first of all, to cut costs. So in other words, it's a new, modern, and our constitution, and the objective is a new, modern defense force. We don't really see that happening, because we only see dilapidated products like the Navy vessels, like the aircraft, like the vehicles, but you don't ever see a new, intelligent, those kind of things. How can that be used, especially within this alternative funding models? That can be pushed forward, that we can push up our capabilities in terms of defense, but also affordability within the spectrum. If I look at the funding, to what extent have you involved Development Bank, IDC, Small Business Development Fund, those kind of alternatives for funding that is available there, and to what extent can we play a role by interacting with either DTI or our committee in that regard, because some of those entities fall under the oversight of DTI, and somehow we must try to bring these things together. I share the concern of the NACC that is not meeting regularly, and somehow we, Chairperson, we also have to find a way of making a recommendation that, you know, those gaps must be filled so that the industry is not hampered by not getting those permits. I can just say from own experience, I've interacted with many people in the industry, and that, EUC, the permit situation, that is clearly as a real problem, where those countries say, sorry, then we don't buy from you. If that is, because although it said may, it's not necessarily that it will be, but they read it differently. So somehow between us and those foreign countries, via DIRCO and the president's involvement, we have to find a solution. Either we trust each other or we don't, because I'm sure they see this as a mechanism or as a point where, sorry, you don't trust me. So why must I now allow you to come and inspect whenever you want to? Sorry, it's not going to work. And they see that as a a long-term threat, and we have to do something about it and find a way, either via negotiations or compromises in that point. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you so much. Let me take you, Honorable Vickers, and then Honorable Moshe.
Thank you, Chair.
To then take all of them at the same time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just a small one on the arms score. On page 9, they are saying that all these challenges are attended by a program of industry workshops. I just want to know, when did you start with these workshops, and did you have a tool to measure the impact of that workshops? Chair, and maybe just in sort of an observation, I don't know how to put it, but I want to quote Thomas Sankara, who was saying that our revolution is not a public speaking tournament. Our revolution is not a battle of fine phrases. And I think I must say that our revolution now is to try and transform this reality. We will not have a society if we continue to ignore the reality, the impact of the declining budget. And I want to propose, Chair, that we must look into the budget, analyze it, engage with whoever, assist, and put proposals, but also to monitor and coordinate it. But and I don't want to say militant, because militant is like that's erg. But we must have that militancy, and I think that's what my colleague or my honourable member referred to. That we must start to have that militancy to do things. And I think we must start now, Chair, to look into this, and also through that promote cooperative governance, because all the government departments must buy into this, because it's a risk, it's a security risk. And from our side, we must do it within the next, I think, 2-3 weeks, whilst we are here. I know that the presenter was saying that in December and in November we are resting, but it is true, we are tired, man. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks, Chair. Let me join those who welcome the presentation. I never thought I would be Michael Jackson, but I am today. I'm speechless. On the basis that the presenters are honest and reflect the truth about what is happening, both in terms of the analogy of the industry and the challenges that I think we are all aware of. As a result of a budget constraint that is faced by the department, which is supposed to inject into the industry and achieve what we seek to achieve as government. Overall, in terms of creating jobs, growing the economy, so forth and so on. But for some reason, on the other hand, we want to grow the economy, but at the same time, we are suppressing it. It's quite bizarre how whether we are doing it consciously or unconsciously. It's something that we must debate, because we can't continue with the situation whereby we effect prescripts or regulation that actually are a deterrent to the growth of the economy and the industry in particular, while on the other hand we are saying we want investors. We are saying, no, come and invest whilst we can generate that particular income by relaxing some of this regulations that we have. I think it all comes down to a political will, Chair. I think we have engaged with everybody. We now must take a step to engaging decision makers so that we resolve these challenges once and for all. Or we must decide whether we are going to just rubber stamp and continue in this path. So it's a decision that basically we need to make. Be that as it may, I want to look at the as to look at the last presentation. It is not numbered. I think the slide where it deals with employment comparison from 1990, 2017, so forth and so on. If you look there on employees, it says 15,000 employees in 2017 as compared to 1990, huh? Which does not look very good because it means jobs have been lost in the industry from 1990 to 2017. We have lost a lot of jobs. I'm not sure. It may be a wrong interpretation, but reading it from where I'm reading it, it's saying 15,000 employees as compared to 130 in 1990. Maybe they can clarify if there was a loss or what is happening there. On the other hand, it said there was a growth from 873 million in the mid-1990s to 11 billion, which it means we are in terms of exports, the industry has grown, but it grows on export, but there's a reduction of job, which I find very contradictory. To say if we are able to export and have income, why are we losing jobs at the same time over that period of time? And the page before that, where it talks, where you have depleted, I think 72 companies that are the players in the industry. To what an extent can you report to us? Probably should have reflected from the slide that we are from that point of 1992 to 2017, the transformation and force, and who are the new players in that space that you might find in that picture that you are showing now, because as much as we have got challenges, in order for us to move smoothly resolving these other challenges, we need not leave the important task that we have or mandate of redressing the imbalances that are caused by the past regime. Now, in so doing, we need to from time to time check whether transformation in terms of what is there is being enforced. You've got new players that are actually in terms of their BEE scores and so forth and so on, in terms of young people in that space, women, so forth and so on. Can you give us an highlight if we are moving as well in the correct direction in that regard? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, it's mouthful. Let me invite you. You can write how you want to deal with the questions between the two organizations. I'm not too sure if Denel would want to have a word, But I thought we'd have a session with Dineke at some point. But you may want to say something in passing. I don't want to silence you in the event you want to say something. And so let me just say over to you. You'll guide me how you want to deal with the questions between the two of you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll go first quickly. The issue of the feedback from National Treasury on resource-based fund alternative funding, I will ask Dr. Kanyile to answer as part of the answers later on. But just very quickly, and I'm going to throw in comments and answers into one thing as well while I'm doing it. Just to show...
Also be mindful of time.
Are we out of time?
We need to be out of
time. You know, we've been suffering so much. The 30 minutes for us is almost...
No. I gave you an ample time during your presentation.
No, but
to cover.
By all means, yeah, by all means. By all means. But I think what I would, you know, probably as part of the answer I want to highlight, and it shows this lack of militancy, this lack of purpose in what we are doing that the two members have spoken to. Unfortunately, they are not here. Guard Force, which secures our national key point, OR Tambo, is a UK company that is underwritten by Lloyd's and refuses to take some of our equipment when we are exporting. SAA refuses to transport military equipment. We have to use foreign airlines, which now means instead of exporting directly from Joburg to Sao Paulo, we have to go in some cases through with Lufthansa and KLM through Europe. The things sit there for 3-4 days. They already probably know what you are selling to Brazil. You've lost client confidentiality and everything that goes with it. Just to show some of the bad decisions that we are making that have an impact on other things. In the case of the defense budget, I understand the member saying that we shouldn't be asking to take money from any other socioeconomic demands that are there. The fact of the matter is that when border control was moved from the Department of Defense, it was moved with its budget. When it was returned without a budget. The billion rand that was taken from defense when it was moved to the police was not brought back with inflationary increases when Department of Defense had to again deploy the 22 companies that it has. It's almost like having 5 children, feeding 4 and starving the other and saying, prove that you are worth being alive. Prove that you are worth being alive. And when it's dying, you ask, why are you dying? You have to take food from the other 4 and feed this one if you want all 5 of them to be alive. It cannot be it's not monopoly money. It's not, and it's not complicated. It's straightforward. If you are not funding a function, you either need it or you don't need it. The same applies even to the deployments that we are doing. You know, we last week the minister was sitting with our female deployees in the UN receiving accolades for the good work that they are doing for functions that are not funded. We have international obligations to deploy. Our troops go there. It comes from the operational budget. It doesn't come as a budget line in the budget vote when it comes through. So it affects the funding of the thing. The issue of the FDA, which I don't think all of us touched on, but I want to mention, Chair, this committee has to find a way to stop the collapsing of the ADA, of the FDA, as an enabling instrument in defense acquisition and defense financial management. Yes, if you have an FDA in place, but you don't have the money, you are useless. There's nothing you can do anyway. But if you have the money, but you don't have the FDA, all these challenges are going to compound, even the ones around PFMA that we were mentioning earlier. The FDA is a key enabling instrument in the department's financial management instrument. And I think the challenges that AG may have with the FDA are not insurmountable if you get the right people around the table to manage it.
Let me ask.
Yes.
Just to deal with the question.
Okay.
Because the FDA issue is part of the declining budget.
Mm.
and we've dealt with it, and we are aware the impact, that if it continues to decline to a point where it is, you know, getting rid of, what impact would that make on the on the industry? I think that has been made loud enough now.
And then, as I proceed, Chair, with your permission, on the issue of EUCs that you've mentioned, sir, just also for the committee to note, we've been exporting for the last 20 years. We've only ever conducted one verification visit, or we are conducting verification visits to one country on a transaction that was completed before 1994. I'm not at liberty to give the details here. So we are insisting on stopping 25 billion rands worth of business on the possibility of an inspection that may never happen, because in the 20 years that we have sold equipment, we've only inspected one country on a transaction that was done before 1994, and for political reasons, that country agreed to say, we understand this democratic government wants to look at what was done by the apartheid government. So that clause is important, we agree, but I think insisting on it is not in our interest at the moment. Now, to the questions. Sir, you asked the questions about the impact on SARS. The 2.3 billion rands that you have there is actually what the industry is contributing into the fiscus. But, yes. The loss, in terms of the loss, we have not done that analysis, because you did ask that question to say, have you analyzed that? So we've not analyzed this. What I can say to you is that the 2 billion is an understatement to the extent that it doesn't look at all the tax categories that are there that I mentioned earlier on. This is primarily VAT and BAE. You know, all the other categories are not looked at per se, pay as you earn, as they say. The second question...
Sorry, Chair, I just want to, if you can do that and maybe send us, you know, that information, because remember that contributes to the funding of what we require, and then we can make out a case of the industries to a large extent fund the fiscus and then the expense eventually as well. So that's important.
The next question about possible losses of work to Boeing. I think you would have meant Airbus. The work that we are doing largely with Boeing is done through a separate entity which is not currently facing massive challenges. The challenges are there across the board. We did a lot of work, a lot of good work on Airbus. I think Danel established a second to none composites facility that contributed greatly to A400M as a platform. However, when the committee does engage with Danel at the right time, and maybe later on the COO might want to comment, our understanding is that Danel is choosing to exit that business, and with that will go that part. Being able to integrate Danel into the global supply chain from an aerostructures point of view. One would only hope that when that happens, it is managed in a manner that at least some of the capabilities are retained and availed to local industry, and that the process will be managed in a way that enables that and doesn't obliterate the capability. You know, in the past we've seen wholesale auctions of equipment, some of which is effectively taken and cut up into scrap in the case of particularly the landward environment in the past. This might not happen in aerostructures, but I think what Danel needs to be encouraged to do is to manage this process in a way that is going to mitigate this dilemma and optimize whatever can be salvaged in the national interest. In terms of the summit, as I said, we are involved in PPGI, the Public-Private Growth Initiative. We are in the process led by the DTI and DPE of crafting a master plan for the sector. For instance, what the President launched yesterday as the Roslyn Auto Hub is a work, a result of 5 years of work in the automotive sector in establishing their own master plan, which has become the benchmark for the work that we are starting to do. So a short answer to your question, no, we are not involved, not because we do not intend to, but it is our hope that in the SONA in February, we should be able to have our draft master plan as part of the investment outlook of the country come through, and that hopefully in the next investment summit, we will have pronounceable projects to speak to. So it is a deliberate decision based on the very early stages of the process that we are in as an industry in this process. In fact, we started participating in PPGI on the 18th of March this year when it had been running for 9 months prior to that. So we are joining come lately in the process and we are trying to position ourselves in that regard. The issue of the regionalization of the industry and reprioritization, in this regard, I think you asked that question. And I think in the AMSCO presentation, there was something that spoke about consolidation of industry and so on. Some of the things will happen naturally in industry, but some of them will require direct political guidance. As an example, if I didn't have this slide here. In the U.S., there is what is called the Last Supper, which was a meeting that was called by Secretary of State about 15 years back, where he set them down literally, Lockheed Martin, all of them that were there, and said to them, guys, this is my budget, this is my future trajectory, this is what I want in future. If you don't fit this, you will die. And that forced consolidation and rationalization in the U.S. defense industry. The problem that we have from an industry point of view is that we don't have visibility of the Department of Defense's planning from a future outlook. When there's a problem like this and the budget is depleted, we know very quickly. But when there is money available and there are plans, they become secret under the guise of the Strategic Capital Acquisition Master Plan that we never get to hear about. But somehow foreigners get to know about quicker than what we do, and it always happens. So there has to be a way to take industry into confidence in the planning from an acquisition point of view. And these countries that I mentioned, the UK, Australia, Canada, are doing it quite successfully. The fleet rollout for the Canadian Navy is public knowledge for all companies to make possible. The issue of that were raised by an Honorable Mutle, you are right in your interpretation of job, literally in terms of job losses, and that's because, as we said earlier on in the same slide, you are moving from about 3,000 defense-related companies to, if you want to use the AMSCO figure, 224. We are talking about 120, of which 72 are members. So the industrial base has shrunk literally, all right? Hence the jobs that went with it. Now, the flip side of it is that the defense industry as the high-tech sector is not a labor-intensive sector. So the growth in revenues that you see in the ratios of analysis in terms of productivity per employee, that you will find that a defense employee has got a much higher productivity rate and returns in the bottom line of a company than many other sectors. If you compare, for instance, from an automotive point of view, the work that Isuzu is doing, when any of them, not just Isuzu, when any of them bring an engine, a diff, and a gearbox, assemble a truck, and export it. And you take what we do when we bring in an engine, a diff, and a gearbox, and we assemble an armored personnel carrier. Rent for rent, two vehicles with exactly the same components. The military vehicle is worth probably 3-4 times more in value than this vehicle. So the increase in exports is based on the nature of the sector. It is not a labor-intensive environment, but that is not ground not to increase employment. If we have visibility of planning, we can, you know, plan these things. If we have the political support in terms of the very same exports that we should be improving on, the sector will most certainly grow. But what you are seeing is a group of people who are trying to keep a lean and mean machine because they don't know what the future holds. The issue of transformation, which you referred to, in terms of the companies that are there and also the reduction that is there. I think we have always come forward and admitted in advance that we are probably operating in one of the least transformed sectors in the South African economy. I said when I spoke about the charter that this was the third attempt at drafting a charter that became successful. So the first two had been very successfully frustrated. There's a lot of interesting observations that one can make, ranging from the fact that even up to today, though we do have a charter which is endorsed and owned process-wise by the Minister of Defense, the Department of Defense still does not have in the department a properly established directorate to oversee that charter, as is expected of every other government department that has a charter to look out to. So these are things that we have been pushing the DoD to say, we need you to help us drive transformation in the sector. At some point, we would have interesting discussions with AMSCO, where AMSCO would say, no, we are focused, you know, we comply with triple PFA. The BEE codes are there, but and later on try to bring in, infuse BEE codes into it. I think now we have the opportunity for driving transformation through the charter if we implement it properly, because we have it in place and it's coming there. There are some players who are very craftily defining themselves outside of defense so as to not comply to the charter, and saying they are commercial in their outlook going forward, but I'm sure we will catch up with them as we roll out this charter and prevent them from being a leakage and not complying in this regard. So what I can undertake to do in response to both members' questions, the one on SARS, is to try and do that analysis, but also in response to another one, Mutle's one, to get the figures as optimally as possible of what the lie of the land is from a transformation point of view. There are certain new entrants. There's not a lot. Some of them are enabled, in fact, through AMSCO's DEFTED program that it does with the DoD. But it's still baby steps, and we are not yet as far as what we could have been as a sector. And sometimes the excuse becomes exactly the challenge that we're in, that says, don't forget, your lever for BEE is indeed procurement by the state. So if you are not buying, you know, what is your lever? And I call it an excuse. I know my own members would probably crucify me for saying so, but those are some of the challenges that are there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Dinel, let me just ask the COO for Dinel just to say something.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to make a comment specifically in relation to the A400 Airbus exit from Dinel. We took a position as a business to exit, you know, that part of the business. We were depleting something like 250 million per annum loss as a result of the volumes not coming into the business. I think this is as a result of the cut in budgets globally. As you'll note, that the A400 was a sort of a joint venture between South Africa and the European Union in establishing that facility and establishing that manufacturing facility. Unfortunately, with the cut in budget globally in defense, there were no volumes that were coming in. And as a result, for us to remain liquid as the Dinel, we had to take a position, and that position was then to exit that type of a business. So we are busy winding it up. We have applied for Section 189 through the government, and we are busy with the process of retrenchments, and we are looking at around 223. In fact, the figure was 263 people that will have lost jobs, in fact, that are going to lose jobs as a result of the exit of that business. Coming to Hamilton, in terms of ensuring that the process is done effectively, we are trying to, as far as possible, to deploy some of those highly skilled engineers and artisans within the business where possible and retain them. However, we have made a provision of around between 30 to 40 personnel that were working in that manufacturing business to retain them to can be able to support, you know, the Roy Falk, that we know that, you know, the SNDF, you know, is deploying that type of aircraft in the DRC. So the critical stuff for Roy Falk will remain out of the aerostructure business, but then we'll lose, yes, 223 odd, the people that will lose as a result of exit of that structure. I'm not quite sure in terms of the industry what will be the impact, you know, once the business is wound up. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much. Acting CEO.
Thank you, Chair. I will touch on the woofer instead. It keeps on coming back. It's an alternative. At this stage, we are still contracted to deliver the woofer instead project, but of course there are delays. And as you will recall, Honourable Member, that at some point we have highlighted that there are considerations or assessments that are being made to look at the impact of the 24-25 months delay, and the fact that obviously there is a decline in budgets, I mean a steep decline, as to say, are we continuing with the project? But ultimately, AMSCO as a contracting agent will get the directive from the end user environment, which is the client, DOD, who will then have to pronounce to say, is it still a requirement? But as things stand, it is still a requirement that you must produce a vehicle of the caliber of a woofer instead. But as to whether as we rewind down the investigations and present the findings of various acquisition committees, whether the decision will be to say we stick with woofer instead, but perhaps look at the milestones, moving them towards the right, or look at the number of quantities that needs to be produced or variances. Those decisions are not yet made. Until such time the decision is made, we will only be in a position to pronounce clearly, to say, are we sticking with the woofer as specified, or are we looking at different configurations, resetting the existing variants that we were tasked to produce, or alternatively, look at a completely new vehicle, either upgrade the RATEL, but what are the cost of upgrading the RATEL? Does it make any business sense or business case? So those are the considerations that currently from a client environment with the support of AMSCO we are busy looking at, and I think we've also communicated that position to Danel as well, they are aware, but it can't, you know, be delayed for too long, because it has other unintended consequences, especially from a Danel's environment with its subcontractors as well. So I think that's where we stand. We hope that such a pronouncement will be made, you know, early next year, sooner than later. So I think that's where we stand with regards to the woofer instead. The issue of rationalization, I think Simpiwe touched on it. I know, for an example, even from a Danel environment, they came to present to us their turnaround plans, turnaround strategy. So I think we are working with them. And of course, I mean, as things develop, they are informing us and communicating such decisions. Failed bids, largely, it will be issue of straight, you know, non-compliance with the regulations or tax clearances, tax certificates, and all of that. But bulk of it as well, you know, it talks to the bigger challenge that if you are not spending on your R&D, invariably your industry starts looking, you know, outwardly, and they start looking at the export market, and what then tends to happen that as the client environment gives us new requirements, the specifications, you know, which in some cases talks to the advanced technological solutions, you'll find that your industry is not geared up or is not ready to support you because they don't have visibility of what you will be looking at your plans basically going forward. So there is no congruence between the client DOD environment as well as the industry that needs to support you. So I think those are some of the misalignments that tends to cause that that issue. But of course, I mean, some of the issues you could blame, you know, a lesser percentage to AMSCO's own staff work and things like that. But by and large, it talks to those areas. But Mr. Mkhwanazi can also expand on that, give us specifics. The industry workshops, post the launch of the codes, we haven't had an industry supplier day, and we are looking at having one within the month of November. But that's just going to be the start of many workshops that we will have. But we also need to want to get a sense to say what sort of support do these companies require, so that we can be able, from our side, make sure that we tailor-make support or plans that talks to the solutions, so as to enable them to participate meaningfully in these projects. But I'll hand over to Mr. Mponas to expand on those.
Thank you, Chair. I think the one of the delays has been dealt with adequately. I'll just touch on the other question that was asked, which is the denial. Which companies are in that red quadrant? There are about 10 SOEs that are in that group. Like I indicated, if we look at them, it's mainly in Denel and AMSCO. About 7 of them are in Denel, because I said, remember, the group is segmented in a number of subsidiaries. So you're looking at about 7 and 3, which in total makes 10. And in terms of the force multipliers, the question was, which are those technologies that one would regard as the force multipliers. I'll just state about two examples. For instance, the issue of the radars. If you're looking at the border control, rather than to have a number of boots on the ground, one can be having radars, you know, to sense and survey the environment. The other technology is the UAVs. If one has got the UAVs instead of, you know, monitoring that particular environment, one can use the UAVs in terms of monitoring a number of areas. So those are the kind of technologies that we're talking about when we're talking about the force multipliers. Just to add on that one where we're talking about the workshops, we've had industry training. Industry day, we normally have it once a year. And we tend to categorize in terms of the audience that we would like to communicate with. For instance, we'll have a group of small businesses, black companies that we talk to. We had a session also of the veterans, a group of veterans where we met and discussed with the veterans in terms of showing the opportunities. Then we had another one where we were bringing together the bigger companies and small companies for them to network so that they could find, you know, where areas of partnering and areas where they could be identified as subcontractors by the bigger companies. And also, we are intending to have one currently, I think it's this month in November, so that we also meet the small companies and go through the same workshops that we normally do. In terms of with those that we've done in the past, have we seen some improvements? Yes, we have seen a lot of improvements. We've got new entrances that are now participating in the defense industry as a result of those previous engagements that we've had with the defense industry. Some of them are even sustainable. You know, they are having now a number of orders rather than just once off and then they are out again in the industry. I think those are the ones that I needed just to touch on. Thanks.
Colleagues, thank you very much. Are there any other questions? I will not allow just one question.
Yeah, not a question.
Right.
Just maybe also a request In that red and orange column, it is important that we must know the state of enterprises who are in jeopardy or in high risk of being either being liquidated under the NEL, because those are the ones that we have to protect. So those that we have got a role. So if you can, you know, help us to know who they are, then we can play a role in trying to protect them, rather to find out afterwards that we have lost a strategic company purely because we have done nothing and because we didn't know. Thank you.
Today, what is missing in the presentation, or the, at least the two presentations that we have received so far, is the presentation from the ENDIC, the Development Industry Council. It's one body that has been established precisely to address the bottlenecks in the industry. And it's chaired by the minister, and who has delegated to the Secretary for Defense, DGs of a number of identified entities, government, and CEOs of entities sit on this very critical body. And in other words, part of the challenges that have been highlighted, if that body meets and honors its commitment to the resolution of the problems, I have no doubt that some of those challenges will actually be dealt with. And one of the challenges that was mentioned is the import replacement. I mean, people saying, why must we import something that we can equally produce as a country? I mean, if the president and the minister for DTI promote investment in productive areas that will grow the economy and create jobs, I don't see why this area can actually escape the attention of the powers that be, because it's an important sector, and but as it drives its production and investment in the economy, it gets you know, there are these other things that happen. I mean, which shouldn't happen. Shouldn't really happen. I mean, Honourable Mike raised the point. I mean, why are we, you know, why can't take the decision that local is lekker? I mean, there was this slogan that local is lekker, and but it remains a slogan. I mean, you can pinpoint, you can identify, you know, areas where you think, in fact, it would have mattered most if we had applied that strategy, that slogan there. You know, but it's actually not happened. I think we need that presentation, and we will take it. It is the intervention plan of that unit that will spell out how they intend to deal with the 18 companies that are said to be really in that danger of that are seriously impacted upon by the decline in the budget. I'll come back to you, sir. Yeah. So we will get that presentation. So I'm saying it's critical we get that presentation so as to complete the picture, and also just to get exactly what is it that body is doing. I know they've developed a strategy, and I don't know how far they are with their implementation plan. I'm told they will be launching the strategy or publishing the strategy in a month or two. So I'm sure we can get a preview of the strategy itself. That's one part. And the second part is the NACC. All right? NACC is one very critical. It's not an administrative body, you know, to say, you know, it's there for a particular reason. All right? And one, to ensure compliance, but at the same time, to also look at you know, aspects that may actually undermine, that's my view, our competitive edge as a country. One other area, I think it's been mentioned, is the this certificate thing. What do you call it? End user certificate. Insisting on it, there may be a good reason why we're insisting on it. And I'm told, I think it's been mentioned here, that the only time when this was enforced, in fact, it was enforced once, but in relation to a transaction that happened way back, I think in the 90s. So it means that it's there, but it remains a threat to the countries that we are dealing with. But of course, we have to just look at that. If it means taking a presentation on it and discussing on it, why we needed it, and what was the reason, and all that, perhaps it's one other thing that is critical. And then the third point is the acquisition plan of the Department of Defense. Now, it's fine when all of us are crying for money, but when there's money, we are told here that they sit in their own corner and they don't even share their future acquisition plan with the industry, so that they're then able to align their plans accordingly. That's one area of weakness in government. I mean, public works, there's been an issue. Public works, you know, for the next 3 years, how much you'll be getting, you know, for capital projects. Let me not say public works, but departments that have capital projects. They know 3 years ahead that they'll be getting so much. But to tell public works that this is our plan for the next 3 years, to tell whoever they work with, brief them out to say this is their plan for this, they don't, you know. Making them, those people, public works and other contracting agencies, to now work on a year, 2 year basis in terms of their own plans. So I'm saying probably it's a matter that DOD should, we must actually take it up with them. And the last point is DINEL. DINEL has had serious challenges in the past, and so we want to see how you are, you know, extricating yourself out of that situation. So we'd expect you to present your turnaround strategy in this regard. I know we've been told that NDIC conducted a study into the challenges that are inflicting Daniel. Perhaps we should get that report, from the NDIC and NDFA, so that when you make your own presentation, we understand whether your turnaround strategy does in actual fact address the issues as pointed out by the study or the investigation. So, colleagues, I don't know. Until we've had these presentations, I don't think we'll be in a position to make a firm and concrete recommendations as to way forward. And so we must find time to have these three bodies at least, DINEL, the NDIC, DINEL, NDIC, and the NACC coming to do the their presentations, so as to complete the picture, to enable us to make a concrete recommendation on the way forward. Except the things that I've just highlighted that need urgent attention. And colleagues, any other thing, Mr. Market?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think maybe if we could say that we be given, should I say, a list of things that can be produced in this country, as this committee, so that maybe we can go somewhere and say, why are you not buying from here? If it doesn't work, at least we have got something to justify ourselves, or we tried. Even if we would have done nothing. But at least somebody has got to explain. We talk about foreign direct investment. I've never heard of a conference, local investment focus conference, something of that nature. I've never heard anybody saying anything about that. So at least if we could get that, and we go and ask, or no, why don't the police have this type of weapon, because we can produce it. And which means that the technology that we have might be exported once we don't have it in this country, which looks very stupid, extremely stupid if I was to say. And I'm not sure the last thing, the end user certificate. Why does it come at the tail end? I mean, you can't sell me a TV and then after that you want to come into my house. I gave you your money, you gave me the receipt. What do you want? Can't come jumping into my... So why is it placed that way? Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, on that last point, if I can just add, we know that the NCACC, when they issue the permit, must be in compliance with the UN regulations on arms control. So those must be the criteria. Now, I am not sure whether the end user certificate is a requirement of the UN resolution. If not, why do we enforce it? And obviously the UN regulation should have all the requirements for UN members. So we should comply with the UN regulation and not over-regulate to the extent that we are losing business and investors' confidence in that regard. That's just another point.
Yeah, that's exactly the point we will discuss with both the NACC. And the NDC and the Defense Industry Council. We will actually be asking a question, what are you doing about it? Because it's been identified as one of the bottlenecks. And no, it's fine. I'm alive to that. DOD, you wanted to say something before we close?
Yeah.
Just introduce yourself and then
let me know what you want to say. Director of Defense Industry Governance and also responsible for NDC.
I'm Trevor Kolamkiti, responsible for defense industry governance in the DOD, as well as NDIC. I just wanted to say, NDIC, I think they've done their best. They commissioned the study on Denel, the challenges, what went wrong, and what are the solutions, and even appointed a technical team to save Denel, which includes Denel, the CEO of Denel, CEO of AMSCO, CEO of AMD, and then DOD, myself in the DOD. And the question of EUCs, the end user certificates, again, it took the leading role, and I think it was a question of correcting the NCACC. If I remember, they had just to confirm the wording and correct, because this is not necessary, as I think the Honorable Mr. Marek said, because this is not a requirement by UN, and it's not a requirement by anybody. It's the way that our own people crafted the policy. Also, on the resource-based alternative funding model, it is an ending solution in trying to find a solution to fund the different entities, including, by the way, the equipment for the South African National Defense Force. The small arms and ammunition designation, again, that is ENDIC resolution. And ENDIC will be meeting next week on the 12th to endorse the strategy.
Yes, the strategy.
And on the question of DOD not being open on acquisition, that is my struggle. Since, I think, 2004, when we started supporting the defense industry, and I think it's myopic, in my own opinion. And I wish the company could assist and make sure that the DOD does open itself on acquisition. Our companies have to know, because what happens is companies from abroad, because they know and our companies don't know, they will come to a company that is struggling, like it is now, and say, can I buy you over? Here's a million. Because the company is struggling, says, hey, a million is better than nothing. Take the million. 2-3 years down the line, there's a tender worth 500 million. And there's nothing the poor owner of the company or the owners can do. So if this has to change for the good of our defense industry and for the good of the country, and the problem is, when we inherited the National Defense Industry Council, there was this thing that defense industry is there. People never saw the defense industry as part of the National Defense Force and as part of national interest. Therefore, it's in the national interest that we tell our industry, because it is in our national interest for us to grow the industry so that we can create employment and develop the defense force, so that we can protect whatever achievements economically we have. Thank you.
Am I wrong to expect that the NDIC strategy will talk even to the issue of acquisition plans by DOD, SAPS, and Transnet, and other bodies that acquire equipments that can be produced locally, but they go abroad?
No, we didn't go that far. If I remember very well, we didn't. I think maybe we missed that one. But we thought we'd tackle it through NDIC, because most of these companies, I mean, of these departments, are represented in the NDIC.
Perhaps it's an area that needs to be plugged, so that at least we know that we are not leaving it to anyone's guess or discretion, but is there as part of the government strategy to deal with the issues stifle growth in the industry. I mean, it's been mentioned many times, and indeed it's a serious issue. So we was fine. We'll take it up when we meet with the industry, different industry council.
Thank you.
Sure. Anything? All right. So, Mr. Mutler.
Because Dinel must come back to DOD. It's a resolution that it must come back. It must come back to DOD, to the defense. It's seated
it must
in,
be relocated from the public enterprise.
It must be relocated, from where it is now. But we don't want to inherit it with challenges. How far are they in terms of resolving their challenges, and maybe to get it from AMSCO, AMD, how effective will it be? How effective was it working with Dinel when it was still with you, as opposed to it sitting somewhere else and accounting somewhere else, so that we don't just bring it back for the same of It's like we don't want to change a cup of a coffee with the intention of changing the coffee, but in changing only the cup and drinking the same coffee.
It's a policy question. Do you still want them to deal with it, or we leave it to...
For them to make input, whether to say to us is better if Denel is with us, or it's better when it's where it is, or it will be worse, or because they work with it directly, they know there are challenges of Denel being somewhere else or Denel being home.
Yeah, it remains a policy discussion. Mr. Mkiva?
Thanks, sir. All I want to say is that Denel wouldn't be in this mess if it was reporting to the DOT, because we would have seen the signs. And to extricate Denel from the mess, it's costing us as DOT. Wouldn't allow a company to be so backward with delivery. But because it's Denel and it's a DOT company, you know, we think twice, and we spend a lot of resources trying to help Denel, to be honest.
I think you're the better person to respond to it, because you are in the Department of Defense. I think, does it cover your question? Yes, to a certain extent. That's fine. So, but we'll take it up with the powers that be. It's good that you have shared it, like, have given us some information on it. On the list of the things that you requested, I think we will get them from the NDIC, because this strategy must speak specifically to those issues. Yes, sir.
Chairperson, I was just interested in what my colleague was saying. If it was not a resolution, he's actually saying, no, we don't want them anymore.
No, let me not comment on that. Colleagues, it's after 1, and we're scheduled to finish at 1 o'clock. And 2 hours of the time we gave it to the industry, and then we shared the hour for questions and answers. But we've decided we are going to have another engagement now with the other bodies that are critical in the in the performance of the site, NDIC, Denel, and ACC. We now know exactly the issues that we'll put to them when we meet with the colleagues. Denel was here. I'm sure he'll come to us well prepared for this engagement. With our colleagues, let me call it a day. Thank you so much. I thank all of you for your coming.